All right, so we're diving into the Book of Daniel today, specifically Chapter 8. You send over some notes from a lecture on it, and well, it's about this vision of a ram and a he-goat.
Yeah, it's one of those images that really sticks with you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a ram and a he-goat.
Yeah,
it sounds a little out there,
mm-hmm.
but apparently it unlocks some serious ancient history. And you know, I love a good mystery.
Uh-huh.
So where do we even begin with this prophecy?
Well, the lecture starts in Shushan, the capital of Elam. It's, you know, it might not be a name that everyone recognizes.
Yeah, I have to admit, I had to look it up.
Exactly. And that's kind of the point. At the time of Daniel's vision, it wasn't really a major player.
Oh, okay.
But it becomes super important later on. So keep that in mind as we go.
Ooh, foreshadowing. I love it.
Yeah.
All right, so Daniel, he's in Shushan, or at least that's where his vision takes him. What does he see?
He sees a ram, two horns. One horn is taller than the other.
Oh, interesting.
And the lecture explains that it represents the kings of Media and Persia.
Ah, okay.
With the taller horn symbolizing Persia's eventual dominance over the Medes.
It's amazing how these ancient prophecies use such a vivid imagery. So this ram, it's not just standing around, is it?
Definitely not. It's pushing westward, northward, and southward.
Is that?
If you look at a map of the Persian Empire's expansion, it's like the vision is coming to life. Right? It's not just some random animal. This ram perfectly captures that unstoppable force of the Persian Empire just sweeping across the ancient world.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So knowing how history played out, this is where I'd expect to see some kind of symbol for the Greeks. And wouldn't you know it?
The vision shifts and suddenly there's a he-goat with a massive horn between its eyes.
Okay.
This is Alexander the Great.
Yeah, exactly. Alexander the Great makes sense.
That lecture points out.
But it's not just any goat, is it? The lecture makes a point of saying it doesn't even touch the ground. Like, it's flying. What's the significance of that?
It's all about speed.
Okay.
Alexander's conquest of Persia was unbelievably fast.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, we're talking about an empire that had stood for centuries.
Centuries.
And he just dismantles it in a few years.
That is just wild. I mean, the lecture even mentions the major battles,
right?
Granicus River, Issus Arbela. All within 3 years.
Exactly. 3 years.
It's hard to even wrap your head around that.
And what I find so fascinating is how the lecture uses those historical events to ground the vision. It shows us that these aren't just abstract symbols.
Right.
They're directly connected to real historical figures and battles.
So the Persian ram gets taken down by this flying goat, Alexander the Great.
Yeah.
What happens next?
Well, here's where things get really interesting.
Oh?
The goat's great horn breaks, and in its place, four smaller horns sprout up.
Mm, okay. That seems like a pretty big shift in the vision. What does it symbolize?
Well, it signifies a couple of things. First, Alexander's death.
Uh-huh.
He died young without a clear heir. And just like the vision shows, his vast empire got split up amongst his generals.
And so the four horns represent?
The four kingdoms that emerged from that division.
Yeah. And what were those exactly?
The lecture names them as Macedonian Thrace and Asia Minor Syria and the East and Egypt.
Wow. And I mean, think about it. This vision is playing out centuries before any of this actually happened.
It is amazing.
The Persian Empire is gone.
Yeah.
Alexander the Great is gone. And now we've got these four new kingdoms all vying for power. What a power vacuum.
Yeah.
That's where we leave things for now.
Not quite. There's one more detail, and this is where it gets really intriguing.
Oh.
A small horn emerges from one of those four horns.
Yes.
And it starts to grow, becoming very powerful.
All right, now that's a cliffhanger. Who is this new player on the scene?
Yeah.
And what does it mean for these four kingdoms?
Well, this little horn, the lecture explains, it represents a future king. Someone with a fierce countenance. Someone who understands dark sentences and will cause destruction. It's a mysterious figure.
So are we talking about like an end times antichrist kind of figure?
Not necessarily. What's interesting is the lecture points out that this figure emerges specifically within the context of Alexander's divided empire.
Okay.
This isn't some far off future prophecy.
Right.
It's pointing to a king who would rise much earlier in history within the Seleucid Empire, one of those four kingdoms that sprang from Alexander's empire.
Gotcha. So this little horn is a real historical figure. Does the lecture give us a name?
It does. The lecture points to Antiochus Epiphanes.
Antiochus Epiphanes.
Yeah. And the name itself is pretty striking.
It is.
Antiochus Epiphanes translates to manifestation of God.
Wow.
This was a ruler who literally saw himself as divine.
Oh, wow.
A manifestation of Zeus, no less.
That's some serious ego.
It is.
But it's one thing to think you're a god. It's another to actually act on it. What did this Antiochus guy actually do?
That's where things get a little darker.
Oh.
Antiochus Epiphanes ruthlessly persecuted the Jews. He defiled the temple in Jerusalem and even tried to wipe out their entire faith.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't just about personal belief either.
Right.
His actions had brutal, real-world consequences.
It sounds like this Antiochus was a real piece of work. The lecture also mentioned something about him clashing with the Romans.
Yes. This is actually where the phrase drawing a line in the sand comes from.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've always wondered where that came from. What's the story there?
So Antiochus had his eye on conquering Egypt,
Okay.
which was ruled by the Ptolemies.
Right. Another one of Alexander's successors.
Exactly. But the Romans, who were quickly becoming a major power,
Yeah.
they weren't about to let him grab that much control.
So the Romans decided to step in.
Exactly. They sent their forces to Egypt, and their general, a guy named Popelius Laenas, confronted Antiochus outside Alexandria. Now, Antiochus, being Antiochus, wanted time to think things
Ah.
over, but Laenas was having none of it.
So what did he do?
He drew a circle in the sand around
Oh,
Antiochus and
wow.
said, "You tell me your answer before you step out of that circle."
That's intense. Talk about a power move. I can only imagine how humiliating that must have been for Antiochus.
Right, here he is thinking he's a god,
Right.
and this Roman general is basically putting him in time out.
So what happened? Did Antiochus give the Romans an answer?
He did. He knew he couldn't take on the Roman army, so he backed down, totally humiliated. But all that rage had to go somewhere.
Oh no.
And sadly, it ended up directed at the Jewish people.
The lecture mentioned some pretty awful things that he did in Jerusalem.
It was a horrific period of persecution. Antiochus banned practices like observing the Sabbath and circumcision. He burned Jewish scriptures and even placed statues of Greek gods in the temple,
Oh, wow.
forcing the Jews to worship them.
It's really hard to believe someone would do that.
It really highlights how unchecked power, especially when mixed with religious zealotry, can lead to terrible atrocities.
But I imagine the Jewish people didn't just stand by and let this happen, did they?
You're absolutely right. This persecution ignited the Maccabean Revolt.
Oh, right, the Maccabee
In
Commandment.
168 BC,
Yeah.
this was a heroic uprising that eventually led to a period of Jewish independence.
What an amazing testament to their resilience in the face of such oppression.
It really is. And if you think about it, the Romans' growing influence in the region played a big role here,
Yeah.
too. Remember, they had just defeated Macedonia in the Third Macedonian War, solidifying their power in the Eastern Mediterranean. It's like all these historical threads are weaving together.
We've gone from rams and goats to real-life emperors and religious wars. It's amazing how this one chapter in Daniel can contain so much history.
What I find especially interesting is that the lecture emphasizes that interpreting this chapter isn't just about understanding the past, it's about looking toward future possibilities as well.
Okay, now I'm intrigued. What do you mean by that? What does all this have to do with us today?
Okay, so we've got this prophecy, right? Empires rising and falling, and then this little horn, Antiochus Epiphanes, this guy who tries to crush the Jewish faith. What's the takeaway here? Is this all just ancient history, or is there something more? Well, the lecture makes an interesting point. It says that this chapter of Daniel, it gives us a framework for understanding not just what happened way back then, but also possibilities for the future. It encourages us to think about how even small events can have huge consequences throughout history.
So even something as small as this little horn can totally disrupt the course of history.
Right. And remember the Jewish people. They rose up, they fought for what they believed in, they refused to be silenced, even when they were facing incredible oppression.
Yeah, that's a powerful reminder that even when things seem impossible, you can still find the strength to resist, to stand up for what you believe in. I mean, their resilience is amazing.
It is. And the lecture points out that this chapter, it isn't just a history lesson. It's like a call to action. It reminds us that we all have a role to play in shaping history.
Even if our actions seem small,
Right, no matter how small they seem.
it's like those ripples, right?
Yeah.
Even a small act of kindness or courage, it can create a ripple effect that we might never fully grasp.
Exactly. And thinking about this chapter, it makes you wonder if a single horn can disrupt the course of history. What impact can we have on the world around us?
That's a really great question. It makes you realize that history, it isn't just something that happened in the past, it's something we're all a part of. We're creating it every day.
It is.
Wow, what a deep dive. We've gone from symbolic rams and flying goats to real-life emperors, religious persecution, and a call to action for today. It's amazing how these ancient texts can still speak to us across centuries.
They really can. It's incredible.
Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey through Daniel 8. It's given us a lot to think about.